This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm David Lazarus from the Los Angeles Times, sitting in today for Tess Viglin. I don't mind saying I disagree pretty strongly with Mr. Kelly's position in that commentary. Call me a running dog socialist, but I think it's the responsibility of the government to ensure that everyone has access to a decent education. All right, some of you might agree with me on this, some of you, not so much. That's cool. Let's talk about it. To go deeper on this issue, I've asked Neil McCluskey to join me. He's Associate Director of the Cato Institute's Center for Educational Freedom. Mr. McCluskey, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what obligation does the public sector have to provide an education, and more to the point, a higher education, to people?
Well, I'd say the public sector actually has no obligation to provide higher education. Now, of course, this is speaking not in the world we're in right now. Obviously, states all have flagship public colleges and universities. They have community colleges. The federal government provides lots of money to students to pay for tuition. But this has led to lots of very painful problems. And I think that when we look at that in its totality, you would say that the public sector really shouldn't be involved in higher education.
But if we leave it just to private institutions, that would make a higher education even less accessible to folks.
Well, see, and I don't think that that's actually accurate. So the first thing we have to say is, let's deal with the big problem. The big problem right now is the price of college is extremely high. There is very strong evidence that the reason it is so high is because the federal government in particular provides lots of people lots of money to pay for college. What do the schools do? They raise their prices and capture that money. So get rid of that, and there's a very good chance the schools would lower their prices so it'd be just as accessible without taking lots of taxpayer money. Then the other thing is, if you don't have states collecting taxes that they then send to public colleges and universities, that money stays with those people. They could use that for higher education, but they could also use it for other things that it turns out might be of more value to them than paying for a public college or university.
But I wonder if supply and demand actually backs up your argument, because if, as you say, if you take some of that funding away, prices will go down. Well, if there is still a steady pool of people with the means and with the willingness to pay the higher prices, then that's going to simply keep the prices up and close the door on others.
Yeah, but the reality is it doesn't seem most people do have the means to pay this. The way they pay it is they either get grants from the federal government or they get subsidized loans from the federal government. Most people aren't paying the price of college themselves. And then you add to the fact that public college and universities, where about 80% of people go, have massive subsidies up front, and almost nobody is actually paying the cost of their own education.
All right. Well, if that's the case, then where do we draw the line? Should the government get out of the building bridges business or the building roads business?
What I can tell you about, because this is what I study, is higher education. And I can tell you from looking at the evidence in higher education, it is very clear that the effect of government intervention in higher education has been on net negative. And in fact, there have been studies that have looked, and they're not perfect. Now, these are not conclusive, but they've tried to control for lots of variables that influence state-level economic growth. The more states tend to spend on higher education, the lower their rates of economic growth. And that suggests that spending on higher ed by government is very inefficient, less efficient than what people would have used their money for if they could keep it.
And yet, at the same time, there have been studies that show that there is a correlation between one's education level and one's income level. And obviously, the higher an income level you have, the more you are paying taxes into society, the more you are generating revenue for society. It would seem to be a good investment to try to ensure that all people in a state or countrywide have as much of an education as they can possibly get their hands on.
Well, and see, this is, it seems very paradoxical, because it's absolutely true that the correlation is the more education you have, the better income you have, the better income safety you have, and that you're less likely to become unemployed. But just as it's very important that we all have food, we all need lots of food. Generally, the people who can access more food and better food are better off. But you can also overeat. You can overeat to the point of obesity. And that's what we're seeing in higher education. We're seeing people having to pay way too much for way too little education that's of value, and way too many people paying for things that they ultimately either aren't motivated enough to finish or unable to finish. So yes, education is important, but we have way overspent on education.
I don't want to belabor the point, but there are many families that, through circumstances beyond their control, can't get enough to eat, and that's why we give them food stamps to help get them over that hump. Well, that's what a public education is. And for families like mine, for example, that can't afford a private education, the public school system is a godsend. And being able to target, like in my case, the University of California or the Cal State system is what makes the whole thing affordable and doable. And if my kid didn't have a shot at those systems, I don't know how I would afford Stanford.
Yeah, but you've got to remember that the price, that sticker price you're looking at colleges and universities, especially the private ones that don't get direct government subsidies but get it through students, all those subsidies are baked right into the price. So when Stanford is saying, well, it's going to cost you $36,000 a year to go there, you know, I don't know what the exact figure is, but you could say $13,000 or $20,000 of that is really based on the aid you can get to pay for it. So that's not what you're actually paying, but that's why sticker prices are so intimidating. But the aid is already built in.
But that's not just it, of course, because also baked into that price is the chancellor's salary, the salary of the faculty, all those Nobel Prize winners that they're trying to woo, all those laboratories and other facilities that they're trying to keep. And so you're not just paying for the tuition. You're not just paying for any financial aid. You're paying for a whole lot more. And I wonder how much wiggle room there is there.
Well, but I think that's an important point. So, yes, you're paying for the chancellor's salary. You're, in many cases, paying for very opulent buildings. I mean, throughout higher education, there's a very well-known amenities arms race that you're paying for. But all of that is in the same system, the higher education system. And that system is awash in gigantic subsidies. So you probably wouldn't have lots of those things, those big salaries, those often underutilized buildings, absent the aid, because they just wouldn't make sense. And often they are not at all integral to giving people the skills and ability and knowledge that they're trying to get out of a higher education.
So you're foreseeing, if we were to take away state and federal funding for higher education, lower tuition costs and less opulent facilities, a more egalitarian higher education system.
Yeah, I mean, I think now, first of all, I should say nobody, myself included, is saying, well, tomorrow we cut out these subsidies. Obviously, this would have to be something phased out over a long time, because clearly people have to do lots of long-term financial planning to go to college. Colleges would need time to adjust. So I don't want anyone to think that I'm saying tomorrow we get rid of these things and then everything will be fine. But absolutely, when you begin to eliminate these subsidies and people pay for higher education or education with their own money, they will try and get the most efficient, effective way of being educated that they can find. And we clearly do not see that in higher education right now.
What happens to state universities? What happens to city colleges?
Well, you know, eventually what you see happen to any college or university is true privatization, and that what was once a government school will become reliant on getting the voluntary funding of other people. Predominantly, that should be through paying students. But there's no reason to say that people can't still make charitable contributions to any college or university. You could still have that. But you'd have to be getting people's money voluntarily rather than through politics and through government. But I think you'd see that a lot of the state colleges, universities, city college universities would have a big advantage in this, you know, now competition with other forms of education, because they already have the buildings, the faculty, and things like that in place. So it's not like they're starting from scratch.
Isn't another scenario that state colleges and city colleges end up collapsing because they can't get the funding to support themselves, thus making a smaller pool of available higher educators, thus making demand higher, thus driving up prices?
Well, I mean, I think you almost certainly would see some colleges, public college universities, go out of business. But that's because they were running inefficiently. They weren't providing an education that people using their own funds or funds they get voluntarily from someone else would be willing to pay for. But the reality is, I think you'd see a lot more inexpensive options that are either, you know, in very limited stages right now or don't exist coming open, a lot more online, a lot more places where you could go, not necessarily to get a full degree where, you know, you want to become an engineer, but you have to take a liberal arts core in addition to that, where you could go and say, look, teach me what I need to know to do the engineering I need to do. Give me a certificate and let me move on with my career. I think you'd see a lot more of that than we see now.
Neil McCluskey is Associate Director of the Cato Institute's Center for Educational Freedom, and he's author of the book Feds in the Classroom, How Big Government Corrupts, Cripples, and Compromises American Education. Neil, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.